So tonight I have good news and bad news. The good news is
that I'm not going to make you talk quite as much. The bad news is I'm going to talk a little more. So thinking about, I've been talking with several of you in the last several evenings and thinking about some of the things that we talk about and discussions afterwards, and a lot of these questions are kind of hard-hitting and a little bit, maybe a little bit negative, kind of heavy. And I have not been giving you a lot of answers. And I don't know that I'm going to give you a lot of answers, but I do want to maybe bring a little bit of clarity tonight, a little bit more clarity. So there's a story that's told about a tribe in Africa that had an enemy tribe overnight had came in and surrounded them. They were totally surrounded. So they woke up in the morning, a small tribe, woke up in the morning, and they look out, and all they can see all the way around them is enemies had formed a perfect circle around them. And this tribe was really small, just a handful of people. So the elders of the city got together and they discussed this. The witch doctor came because that was their spiritual connection there, and they talked about what should we do? What can we do? How can we keep from being destroyed? And finally, they came up with a plan. And they came out to the people and they said, at noon, we want everybody to gather together here in the center of the village. And we're going to tell you what the gods have spoken. So at noon, they came out there and they were afraid. The enemies were just kind of waiting them out. They were afraid, and they knew that their time was limited, that there was nothing they could do, that their resources were not enough. Under the hot African sun, all the people came, everybody in the village came. And the witch doctor, who was a head priest, he came up to the front and he said, we have decided that the only thing to do, the only way that we'll be able to, that the gods will help us, is if we have a human sacrifice. And of course, the crowd gasped. They were kind of very surprised by this. But he said, no, we actually need 10 human sacrifices, not just one. And they can't just be anybody. They have to be the most able-bodied, strongest, best men. And not only do they have to be the strongest and the best men, but they have to be volunteers. Nobody, we're not forcing anybody. They have to be volunteers. Crowd went completely silent. Nobody saying anything. Of course, this is just horrible. This is their last chance. Their last hope is these warriors. And the witch doctor is suggesting that they sacrifice these young men. So they stood there for a while in the sun and nobody moved. The priests were lined up facing the crowd. Behind them, they had a screen set up so that a bamboo or cloth or something so that nobody could see behind there. And after a long while, a young man stepped forward And everybody gasped. It was a priest's son. He was the chief's son. He was the one next in line to rule the village. He steps forward. The priest taken behind the curtain. And there's a thud. Blood runs out from under the curtain. Women are beginning to weep. They're beginning to they just can't believe the extremity of this. But another young man walks forward. Then another. And now the people are openly crying. They just can't fathom the horror of this. 10 young men go behind the curtain. Now there's blood running out into the street. People are just in disbelief. So the witch doctor says, okay, you can go home now. And tomorrow, we'll see what happens. We'll see what can be done for us. So the people went home and they're quiet. They're just aghast. They go home and they just can't believe what just happened, what they just saw. By now it's getting dark. And behind that curtain were 10 dead sheep. And those 10 young men, when they walked behind that curtain, they'd given their lives away. They had no intention of anything more. They were dead. When they walked behind that curtain, the priests told them, your lives are no longer your own. We want you to break through them enemy lines tonight and go over the mountain and tell our friends over the mountain about our situation. And when them young men broke through that line, they were unstoppable because they were already dead. They were already dead. They had already given up their lives, so they were already dead. There were no other humans that were willing to put up with them because they were already dead. And they went across the mountain and they brought back help for this village. So too often in my life, I'm still partly alive. I haven't given my life so fully and so completely as to be already dead. Still a lot of things that I am afraid of, a lot of risks that I don't want to take. So as we went through this week, we started out with what do we have to offer? And that's a question that I've often asked myself. That's a question that I was hoping you'd answer for me, but I don't know if we're any closer than I was before. Because when I was a young man, I wondered that a lot. What do we have to offer? What do we have to offer as Anabaptist people, and why? Why be Anabaptist? Why go through all the trouble? There's a lot of other Christians in the world. Why does it have to be us? Why do we have to be so different? And I had a lot of struggles, and I didn't always deal with life very well. And as a young man, I wanted to do what was right, but I just didn't have the power. And I really, really wanted to serve God. But it was just so difficult. So much of the flesh getting in the way. And I wanted to be a part of the church. But I just couldn't overcome my self, my temptations, my addictions. And I just couldn't attain. And I finally did join the church, but it was rocky. I still not fully overcome my addictions and still had struggles. And I finally ended up back on proving and on probation. And I remember I had a meeting with the ministers, and they said, well, if we don't see some improvement soon, I guess there's nothing left to do but excommunicate you. That was a real blow, and I remember as I was driving home, and this was actually during a week of revival meetings, I believe, and the preacher was preaching, and he told a story about a boy that was just going to leave and walk away, and his grandpa went to him, and he said, and heard about it. So his grandpa went to him and said, hey, I heard I'm planning to sell my farm. And the boy was like, yeah, really? You're going to sell your farm? And grandpa was like, yeah, I'm going to sell my farm. He said, well, I didn't think you'd ever sell it. And his grandpa said, yeah, I'm going to sell it. He said, well, how much are you going to sell it for? He said, I'm probably going to ask $1 for it. And the boy just couldn't believe it. It's like, $1 for the farm? You're kidding me. His grandpa said, yeah, I'm kidding you. But that's what you're getting ready to do. You're getting ready to sell your heritage for nothing. So I was at that point. But I thought about, you know, what else is there? Like, where could I go? And I was like Peter. When When Jesus came to Peter and said, are you going to leave me now too? And Peter said, well, where else could we go? So many, many times that's where I was. Is I didn't leave just because I didn't want to. It's just because I didn't know where else to go. So being a Christian, I wanted to be a Christian. I wanted to serve God, but it was hard. And eventually, I was able to find some help, and I was able to move on in life. But even as a young married, you know, all my friends that I had were leaving the church and they were going to different churches or just leaving entirely. And they kept asking me, when are you going to leave? Like, they knew it was just a matter of time till I was going to leave. But I didn't want to just walk away, because I thought there was, like, I watched people leave, and I saw when they left, I saw the pattern when they left was always just, you know, just straight downhill. I never saw somebody go like this. You know, it was always kind of down, lower and lower and less and I'm not saying Anabaptists is a perfect way to do church. But as I looked around and I wanted more, but I couldn't find more. And I wanted to be sold out. I wanted to be full of the Holy Spirit. And I used to go with my dad out on the streets and he'd go out in the street. My dad was an evangelist. He loved evangelism. Was just his second nature. He loved that. And he'd take us out on the street to hold up signs. And I really enjoyed that. That was actually some of the best memories I have of my dad is out on the street holding up signs. But in those rocky years of my life, part of that was due to this evangelism question. And I was following in my dad's footsteps, and I was very evangelistic in spite of not being very powerful in my spiritual life. I really enjoyed evangelism. It was so much fun to stand on the street corner and have people come over and talk to you and talk to them about Christ. I enjoyed it. I loved it. But our church came, or there were some people started saying, you know, this is getting out of hand. Like, we're not sure about this evangelism stuff. We're not sure about being out late nights and holding up signs in front of bars. Like, well, that's a great idea. Like, that maybe that's, I mean, that's too much. Maybe you're too aggressive. And so our church came along and said, we're going to make some rules to tame this down a little bit because we think it's getting out of hand. I was pretty bitter about that. I don't know if I've ever quite lived that down. I found it really, really hard to swallow. Like, how can we have a whole church full of people that claim that we have the truth? And when somebody is actually trying to take that out, the church comes and says, now let's cool this off a little bit. I just struggle with that. And during that same period of time, I heard a neighboring bishop said that you have to be careful with Bible study because that can lead people away. Too much Bible study can be a problem, or the wrong kind of Bible study can lead people away. And I was like, how can studying the Bible lead people astray? Like, you have to be crazy. But as I thought about that more, I realized that he wasn't as crazy as I thought. Actually, he had a point. I think he had a fair point. But I didn't get it at the time. So I'm trying to put all this together. You know, how does evangelism, how does my relationship to my church, how does my lack of spiritual power in my own life, like, how does this all come together into something that I can actually understand? And everybody told me, just be faithful. You know, just be faithful. Just calm down a little bit and be faithful. And as a young boy, I always wanted to be a farmer. My dad was an evangelist. He was a brick mason. He wanted to go out and do things, and he really enjoyed being around people, and I do too to some degree, but my dream ever since I was a little boy was to be a farmer. I wanted to be a farmer. I remember when I was probably just 9 or 10 years old, just dreaming about if there'd just be a way I could get a couple pigs. And I cleaned out the side. We had an old barn. I cleaned out the side of that old barn. And I thought maybe my dad would let me get some pigs. Well, we never did get any pigs. And we got a horse eventually, and it was okay. But we had chickens and we had some goats, and we had a little bit of a farm. Wasn't much. But when I got married, I decided, you know what, I'm going to figure out this thing. Like, if I'm going to be faithful, I guess the only thing to do is to settle down in a good, stable Mennonite church and raise faithful children. Because I didn't see a lot of... I want to be very careful in how I portray our church. I don't feel like I don't feel like the people were unevangelistic. I just feel like they were a little scared of the methods that were being used. But I was like, okay, if we can't be evangelistic, I guess we'll just raise faithful children. I don't know what else to do. And So I started thinking about raising a family. I said, I'm gonna farm. I'm gonna raise produce, because only farming that I knew how to do that was probably the lowest point of entry. And I like plants. I love growing stuff. So my father-in-law rented some land. He let us rent a few acres off of his property, and we started raising produce, and it was a great life. And I wasn't at that, by that point, I had tamed down a little bit and was being a little more faithful, and a little bit less evangelistic, and I was willing to take the hit and for the stability of my family. And we lived a great life. For about 12 years, we lived at the 3/4 mile back, a dead end road. And my father-in-law rented, at one point, it was probably around 1,000 acres, and it was all ours if we wanted it, however much we wanted. We didn't take very much of it, but we had several acres of produce and a few cattle, and it was a life. But I could never lay down that thought that, is this all there is? It's just be faithful. And our church's solution to the evangelism problem was to go on the foreign mission field. But as I looked at the foreign mission field that we were running, I decided I didn't want to go, because I didn't like the way the mission was run, and it just didn't look like it was going to be a very good fit. I could see myself getting sideways there really quick, so I decided I was just going to avoid that if possible. And then eventually the opportunity came up to serve at a boys' ranch. And I said, well, I like young men. That sounds like fun. I think we could do that. What was I wrong? We went there for 2 years and got my lunch ate and my goose cooked and everything there, but it was a million dollar experience that I wouldn't give a penny for, is what somebody said. I learned that was probably not my gifting, but it was a lot of good things. We made a lot of good friends. But one thing that I noticed there, so we had a team of mentors, and these mentors were the cream of the crop. They were the best that our church group had to offer. And when they came to serve at this boys' ranch as mentors, and they rotated in and out, like some of them were there when we came, and they had 18-month term of service. So some of them were there and some of them left as we were there. But as they rotated through, I noticed something about these young men. And most of them were not enthused about going back to their home church. And we actually had we were trying to figure out how to enact a policy at the ranch where I was serving at this boys' home to make it a little bit easier for these young men to go back to their churches. But as I was talking to them, I realized, is that what I want to offer my boys as they're growing up? Is that what I want them to? Do I want them to have a church group that they're going to go somewhere and not want to go back to? Like, is that really what I want? And I never settled the evangelism question either. But I was comfortable, really comfortable. It's really nice to be in a stable church with stable families. We had a very strong bishop that wasn't letting a lot of things get away. It kind of kept things well under control. good, solid, from the outside, church life. And I didn't know, like, I was looking for something better, but just couldn't find, didn't see it. And the opportunity came along about the same time the problems did. Some of you have heard this story, but I'd been kind of thinking about this and praying about this for years, but never really found any solution to it. But I was always thinking about couldn't church be done better? And then I read Finney Curavilla's book, and I was like, wow, that's the answer. I'm gonna go to Boston. So I called my mom, and since we didn't have internet, I called my mom and I said, hey, can you find tickets for us to go? I want to fly to Boston. And she was like, what do you want in Boston? So I started talking to her about it, and she was like, you should come check out State College because we're kind of similar. And she had ulterior motives, I'm sure, but I had paid no attention. I just thought there was some kind of weird fringe charity group, and I just mostly paid no attention. But right at this, in this very same, as all this was happening, I just felt like I was kind of being comfortable and not really taking any risk for the kingdom. And I felt like we should probably think about doing something else, but I didn't want to. So I told God, okay, maybe we should move. I don't really want to. But I'm going to lay out a fleece. And I don't know what you think about fleeces, but they're probably not always the best way to go about things. But I said, I'm going to lay out a fleece. I said, if my father-in-law comes to us and says he's going to move, and there was another brother in the church that I had a lot of respect for, a young preacher, and I said, if this young man says he's going to move, when we came back from the ranch, our church had started to have some problems, and I was starting to notice this. So this is kind of something I was thinking about. And the property that we were living on was for sale. It had been for sale for years. And as far as I know, there was no serious offers or no serious interest in it for years. It was just kind of an investor owned it, and it was always for sale. So the third thing was if our property sold. And I thought that I was pretty safe. I figured we'd get to stay. And that sounded pretty bomb-proof. I mean, the chances of those three things happening were really slim, because my father-in-law, lots of land, big farm, big-time farmer. I think he had 500 mama cows and farming thousands of acres of land. And I thought, he is not going. Everybody knew he wasn't going anywhere. But don't tempt God, because it wasn't very long, and my father-in-law came and said, "You know what? We're going to move. We think we should go somewhere else." And just in that moment, I knew the rest were coming, because it was unbelievable. I didn't think it ever happened. Sure enough, it wasn't long. Several months. This young preacher said he's going to move. And not long after that, our property sold. But there was a caveat. Because when our property sold, the new owner happened to be our neighbor, and he came over right away and he said, "Listen, I'm buying the property, but I want you guys to stay. I don't want you guys to leave." And I was like, okay, thank you, God, but that was an unclear answer. And so I just prayed about that again. I was like, wow, okay, could we have a more clear answer on that? Like, that wasn't quite clear. And I don't think it was 2 days later, he came back and he said, actually, he was kind of apologetic. He said, "I'm sorry." He said, I talked to my son-in-law, and they want to build a house, and it's like, would it be too much if to just ask you guys to move? And I was like, no, thank you. Thank you. I needed that answer. I needed that confirmation. I needed that answer. So the next question was where? And we ended up moving to State College. I don't know if it was the right thing to do or not. In retrospect, it's been difficult. As I look at my children, I look at the youth group, I look at pictures from where we used to be, and I look at the youth group, and I'm like, they're doing as well as mine are, probably better. I don't know that I made any huge improvements there. But one thing that I do feel like is that I have no longer struggled with worrying about whether I'm in the center of God's will. It definitely feels more like I am. But the downside to that is that I don't live on a farm. I live on a third of an acre city lot. And it's been a struggle. Like, I'm a farmer at heart. Like, I thought we'd get a bigger piece of property or something, and it just never happened. And I kind of grudgingly went and did handyman work just as a way to put some food on the table. And I've got 9 years of experience in handyman work, and I tried some other farming that didn't work out as well. But our comfort is not always what God's looking for. He's not always looking to validate those deep longings within us for whatever it is, whether it's a farm or whether it's... somebody last night said, I think maybe it was you, said about the wanting to move to a city. Is that you? Somebody asked, how many of you are wishing to move to a city? And I'm not really. But I don't know where God's calling me next entirely. I believe we are looking at moving to Louisiana, but the question still is whether we should live in town or out. And my heart says out. But I do want to be like these young men that when it came time, like when they stepped behind that curtain, their lives were over. I think I'm going to stop there. Any questions? Anything that you were hoping to talk about tonight that I missed? Okay, I want to hit three a little bit if nobody has any other questions. Addictions to structure and security are often dressed up as faithfulness. And I think that's something that I definitely have dealt with in my life, is it's so easy to look faithful. If we can just hide in our little corner in our little shell and never have to get out of our comfort zone. So name one structure in your church life that functions more as a security blanket than a tool for mission. Think of any of those.
I think it's a good question. I don't know how to answer it. I don't think sometimes some of the programs or things that we get behind, thinking this is the way to help people, like each other, bring it through to the way just to keep us protected.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a big one right there that I think is really it's so easy for me to think of how to do another program, how to do another, how can, go ahead. That the programs that we have are ways to create some security. And I don't know if were you thinking like evangelistic programs, but that's kind of what I was, that was my thought, was like evangelistic programs that we can have that can be just so, it's so much easier to all get together and go sing at the home than it is to go visit somebody on your own. Like it's just, you get that motivation or that program with somebody else or go put on a conference about missions rather than actually do them. It's just way easier. And some of those things are not bad, but sometimes they replace the good things that we should be doing. I'm sorry I did most of the talking tonight, but thank you for your thoughts.